Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. We're in for a ride, a lot of good quality information on how to live a longer and healthier life. And we begin with an Institute of Pharmacological Technology from India. And a very important herb that's been used there for thousands of years is called ashwagandha, A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A, ashwagandha. And they used the root extract, and guess what? They improved memory and cognitive function. Now, compared to a placebo, adults supplemented with ashwagandha root extract had improved memory test scores. Researchers in India found that this was very important. Now, ashwagandha root has been a part of the medicinal traditions of Ayurveda for memory aid for a long time. This was published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Dietary Supplements. In this current study, researchers conducted what they claimed to be the first trial that looked at the clinical impact of ashwagandha on the cognitive deficits seen in mild cognitive impairment. By the way, we're seeing that in younger and younger people in the United States today. I remember growing up, and I'm sure many of you did also, where even though people were older, senior citizens, they still had their cognition, they had their memory. They were able to function, they recognized everyone. Well, not so today, first because people are living longer, but also because of our diet and our lifestyle, or lack of a healthy lifestyle, is causing inflammation in the brain, and that also causes amyloid plaque to be placed in the brain, and that causes all forms of dysfunction. So now it's not uncommon to have someone who is in their 60s forgetting things. They'll forget simple things like what they read just earlier in the day in a book or a magazine. They'll forget names, especially last names. They'll forget the titles of movies. When you start forgetting these things, you know that you're in cognitive decline. Now, how long it takes to go from there to really being in serious problem, well, it's different from each person. It could be a year, it could be 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 years. I remember once counseling at the behest of a close friend of mine, this person's parents. Now, when I counseled them, they seemed fine. But after speaking to them about their lifestyle, I said, within the next 5 to 7 years, unless you change, you may unfortunately experience some cognitive decline. Oh, no, no, no. And when I asked them, what of the advice, 2 hours, by the way, what are the advice that I've shared with you are you willing to use? And they looked at each other and they said, well, look, we're, you know, I think they were 65 and 67. We're fine. And we expect to be this way 20 years from now. And besides, one of the things that gives us great deal of pleasure is playing golf. And every day after we play golf, we have martinis. And it's just what we do. And with all of our friends, we're not going to give that up. So when over everything they did, they weren't willing to give anything up. You know, like the woman says, well, when I wake up in the morning, you know, I like my coffee, and yes, I have cream and sugar with it, and I like toast with margarine on it, and went through all this. Nothing that they were doing was really healthy. And they really didn't exercise, and golf is not exercise. So anyhow, it was 7 years later, they both had such serious cognitive decline, they required institutionalization. And then within 6 months after that, the daughter said that mother doesn't recognize her, and the father is, you know, substantially incoherent. So please understand, every single thing we do in life contributes to the quality of that life the next day and the next month and year. Can we change it? Yes, we can. Can we reverse a lot of this? Yes. Are there technologies now being conducted with stem cell research that could literally rejuvenate our central nervous system, our brain? Yes. And a lot of those are not far off. But if we don't do something different and better, then you'll be prematurely aging, and unfortunately, you'll lose your cognition. In any case, this was an 8-week study. It was a randomized, placebo-controlled, double-blind study, a perfect study. and people were 35 or older, and they had subjective symptoms of memory impairment or previous diagnosis of early dementia, and with a mini mental state examination. So what happened was, at the end of this study, those who took the placebo did not get any better, got worse. Those who took the ashwagandha improved in executive function, sustained attention, and information processing speed. All that is important. They also did better on general memory test scores. Now, you've heard me mention many times why we should be eating garlic in the diet and onion, and as just an important part of helping with the sulfur getting into our system. Well, there is a nutrient, it is called sulforaphane, and it helps ameliorate neurobehavioral deficits and protects the brain from amyloid beta deposits, what I was just talking about. So this is from the China Medical University and Hospital, and the researchers stated that Alzheimer's disease, which is a common neurodegenerative disease, and its effective therapies are still unavailable. So they tried, meaning they didn't have anything really to reverse it. So they tried using the sulfur compounds to see what it would do, especially impacting the attenuated numbers of amyloid plaques in both the hippocampus and the cerebral cortex of Alzheimer's disease lesion mice. And they found that the sulfur in these substances worked, made a big difference. So it's very scientific, going through the brain chemistry. But what they found was, quote, the sulforaphane ameliorates neurobehavioral deficits and protects the brain from deposits, amyloid deposits, and peroxidation in this study. So one more reason, along with lowering your blood pressure and helping kill off bacteria and viruses, and on all so many levels, garlic is good for you, anti-cancer. Have garlic and onion each day in your diet. I was thinking back over the years, over the decades, how many nights, early evenings, sometimes a little later, 5, 10, one night there were over 30 people from my radio audience who dropped by the Institute of Applied Biology, came up, walked in the dorm, walked down this little hallway with a glass wall. The glass was to protect the mice from exposure to any of the bacteria or viruses that people might have had. And I went along with my experiments, and we had wonderful conversations, and I'd answer people's questions, because people find it kind of fun when you're in a laboratory and you don't know what someone's doing, and you get a whole tutorial. Well, in any case, it was all about anti-aging. And I remember one night a person said, he was a professor from Columbia University. He said, I'm interested in a diet that helps let me live a longer life. Is there such a thing as a longevity diet? And I said, well, the good news is there's many longevity diets, and they all are good. One of the best is the Hunzikut diet, but no one in America knows what it is. It's not available. But I happen to have worked for a period of about 3 years with the emir, the ruler of Hunza's two sons, who came to the United States, was on my show way back in the early 1970s to try to bring information about stopping a road going from China to Pakistan right through their country, because they felt it would have devastating effects. And it did. And we weren't able to stop or even slow down its construction. But in the process, they talked about what made Hunza so wonderful, and not just living at a very high altitude, but one of the things I was always curious about, okay, it's winter, now you're going into spring when you're going to start growing things, but what if you don't have anything to eat? I mean, it takes time. You know, you can't just grow something and a month later you got food. And they said, well, what we do is we have whole areas set aside for different orchards, dozens of different fruit trees, and we have lots of grain fields at lower elevations, let's say 4,000 to 6,000 feet in the Himalayas, very rich, and the soil and the water that comes to them to feed these crops, giving them their nourishment, is rich in minerals. In fact, he brought a box, and this was just taken out of the snowbank there. It was just black, and it looked like black tar. And he says, we use this in all of our medicinal drinks, and it has all these wonderful minerals in it. Anyhow, so what they did is they dried their fruits when they were in season and harvested and stored them. So they had food 12 months a year, but they were very disciplined about it. They had a very good diet. And he showed me photographs of a group of men, all over 100, playing horse polo. You know, a guy over 100 is going to have a hard time getting on a horse, let alone staying there, unless you gorilla glued him to the seat, fall off. No, these were vigorous people, all very healthy. So that was one of the best diets in the world. But then again, the Japanese historically have had one of the longest lifespans in the world. If they are the older generation, the younger generation, no, they're going towards the fast foods, the junk foods. And that's also true in some of the other islands, like the islands of the Pacific have had very healthy diets for a long time as well. And the people stay active their whole lives. They don't retire as such. But on the island of Crete, they have long lives. And then the Mediterranean area. There's two Mediterraneans. There's the Western Mediterranean that most of you are familiar with, but there's the Eastern Mediterranean where, you know, that's the Balkanization area. Anyhow, in the Western Mediterranean, they don't all eat the same foods. It depends upon if you're in Spain or Greece or Italy, France. There's uniqueness to your diet, but they all have something in common. So here is research from the University of Southern California just published this week that examined a range of research from studies in laboratory animals to epidemiological research to human populations so they can get a clear picture of what kind of nutrition can offer the best chance for a longer, healthier life. And this was done at the University of California, Leonard Davis School of Gerontology. And what they did after studying hundreds of studies on nutrition, disease, and longevity, they came up with what they considered the best of the best. And you've heard me mention this many times. Well, the best of the best is what we talk about and what we offered all of our retreats and the anti-aging clinical groups. By the way, that film is done. Good news. It's a very upbeat, positive, and inspiring film. I know it's going to help a lot of people make changes because you're going to see people your age, maybe your physical circumstances, maybe diseases, and overcame all of it. I mean, they're literally biologically younger, and we proved it with the test. Anyhow, here it is. This is what they found and in their analysis. Restrict total calories. Good. Every single study that I've seen in the world shows that calorie restrictions to what your body actually requires is the hallmark of allowing your cells to live a longer life. And staying away from the high-fat, low-carbohydrate, ketogenic diet, but instead going towards a vegetarian and vegan diet that is high in complex carbohydrates. Brown rice, that's your complex carbohydrate. Grains, legumes, beans. And then have intermittent fasting, and we've talked about that repeatedly, frequent and short-term, meaning eat your last meal, let's say, argument's sake, 7 o'clock at night, but don't eat your next meal, breakfast, till 7 in the morning. Give yourself 12 hours, ideally 15 hours, and then 2 days a week, fast. And the fasting mimics diets that help us in reducing caloric intake. Of course, you're still getting your protein, your fats, your fiber, and your drinks. But stay away from solid food. It's really healthy, and you lose weight, and you rejuvenate. So that's what this study found. So it's good to know that, and also they measured you lower your total C-reactive protein level, and you impact your insulin-like growth factor, and you lower your cholesterol. All good. All right? So just imagine that you've been following this for a long time. Then imagine now how you're benefiting. And you know one way you see it? is when you look in the mirror and then you're out amongst friends and you see them, friends who are at the same age, but who took a different approach to choices, possibly the standard American diet and not exercising and not dealing with stress. And you look different. Your skin's different. Your muscle mass is different. Tautness of your skin is different. Your hair is different. Then you start to see it and think, wow, I made the right choices. Even, here's the irony, even when everyone in the establishment was calling you a quack and stupid, no, you were on the right side, even if you were in the minority. And by the way, you're still in the minority. The bad news is only 7% of the American population actively seek healthy choices every day, consistently. Whoa. Now, I look at it differently. I don't say, well, gee whiz, you know, that glass is almost totally empty. To the contrary. I say in a country of between 335, 340 million people, that means there are about 25 to 30 million of us. All right? So you're not alone. A lot of people making healthy choices, and one healthy choice is yoga. Now, according to the Cochrane Collaboration, which is a really good scientific group, yoga can improve people's condition of asthma. That's right. They reviewed studies and found that yoga made a big difference on breathing and lessening the need for medication. So that's good. They looked at 15 randomized controlled trials, which involved 1,000 men and women, and they found that those who had asthma, big difference. So if you have asthma or COPD, certainly bring yoga into it. And by the way, as I just finished watching late last night, the newest film, one of the participants in the film wasn't going to be in the study. Very nice gentleman. And he couldn't be in the study, he said, because he had two terminal end stages diseases, COPD end stage, and according to his pulmonologist, and he also had end stage leukemia. The irony was that his father died of one, and his brothers, two brothers, died of the other. And they all ended up in the same hospice care, not at the same time, and they all died there. And he was going into that same hospice care, that's what the doctor suggested, because there was nothing else could happen. And he decided to come be in the study. It took about 6 months later, but he had multiple, three separate pulmonology reports, x-rays, lungs are clear, you no longer have COPD, and his white blood cell count from leukemia had dropped almost 150,000 measure, and as a result, he is healthy as can be. And incredible. If I believe he is 72, thereabouts, but he was filmed in the gym, and I told Roland, film him just as he's doing his weight work. Film him just from the neck down. He has the body of an 18-year-old athlete, pure ripped muscles. Even by looking at his face, you would guess him to be maybe 40 years old, all right? Not 72, and alive and well. So when I say that this is an inspiring film, it is, but that'll be coming at you soon. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we have a whole lot of good information to share with you. Please stay with us. As probably everyone in this audience is aware by now, last week, the President of the United States and his press secretary announced that there's going to be, under the Department of Homeland Security, a new group. And this group will have the power to determine if information is correct or incorrect. And if it's not correct, woe is to the person that offers it, or the platform, or the website, or the magazine, television show, radio show. They literally have the power to close down all dissenting information in the United States. They have the power to do with you what they will, and you have an idea up to this point, without the law on their side, what they're willing to do to you, in ridiculing you, disgracing you, putting on Wikipedia, that garbage place. They're willing to do anything to destroy your reputation. Even if you're accurate, you have the facts on your side. What do you imagine they're going to do now? This is 1984. This is no longer hiding anything. Now, over the last couple months, I've been playing you clips from a Professor Harari, who is this really the top spokesperson for the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, and all those individuals who've been trained under Klaus Schwab, including Pierre Trudeau, Putin, Obama, all the Merkel, Tony Blair. All these people have been through that indoctrination process, so you know what they're going to do. And to give you an idea of how quickly they work, and they're not hiding their agenda, did any of you perchance take a look at the elections in France? Macron won. Here's what you may not know. Just a few days after winning the federal election in France, President Emmanuel Macron authorized the creation of a digital ID for all of France. Quote, digital ID guarantee service was signed into decree following his victory over Marine Le Pen, which will allow France to be compliant with European Union's digital ID. So now you got over 500 million people plus in the European Union's 27 countries. And you also have now other countries starting to get on board. Worldwide, everyone wants to get on board. As far as countries go, that's because they've all been working together. So also, they're announcing in France a mandatory fourth vaccine for everyone. So it's full steam ahead for the Great Reset. How many people would have voted for him had they known that he was going to do this? And he is right in alignment with Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum's Great Reset. Just want to share that with you. So they're not hiding anything any longer, and they don't have to. And this is just one more way to make sure that the only place you can get your information is from official source material. Just imagine who's going to be on their list, for the first people to target. So just letting you know that, let your legislator know, Democrat or Republican is irrelevant. Let your legislator know that you do not want this type of society, because this then becomes fascism at its worst. You'll have no rights. So, just letting you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you mind? Do you care? Would you care if there's all censorship? That you can only go to Facebook, Wikipedia, Google, and their alliances to get your truth. You can only go to the New York Times. Isn't it amazing? Think for a second. Just common sense. Washington Post, New York Times, Miami Herald, San Francisco Chronicle, Los Angeles Times, Chicago Sun, Philadelphia Inquirer. All of these, plus NPR, PBS, NBC, CBS, NBC, CNN, all of these have control over information, and they all are talking together. They're using the same talking points. If you turn on one program, they'll say the same identical verbiage as another one. That has to come from the deep state, because they're not creating that locally. And yet Twitter now has the opportunity to be this single source of information that allows a discussion with a difference of opinion, and they go crazy. So it wasn't enough to have 99.99% of control over the media. They needed 100%. Look at the reaction. Look at them calling, you know, Joy Reid calling Elon Musk a racist because he comes from South Africa. I mean, it's terrible. So just imagine how threatened they must feel with just one single form that they don't control, which means they control all other forms, all of them. Does that tell you where you've been, what you haven't been paying attention to, and how many times we've been warning you? Now it's here. The knock's on the door. And let me just show you how wrong they've been. I mean, really wrong. And I'm sorry that they were wrong. I wish they were right. But I'm now looking at all the people calling my office. I'm hearing from friends and family members who got vaccinated, because almost everyone I know got vaccinated. Only a handful didn't. And again, I support you whether you get vaccinated or not. I've never told anyone to vaccinate or not. That's not what I do. Now they have to live with the fact that they have a biological agent in their system that nobody anticipated would be happening to their body the way it is. Here's Naomi Wolf. And guess what? Now, Naomi Wolf is highly respected for good reason. She's the second wave of feminist. She's been in the field for a long time, I think around 35 years. At least I will say 35 years I've known of her and her work. And she's been on the right side of issues. The only program that allow her on is Tucker Carlson. Now, there's a lot about Tucker Carlson's thoughts and programs I would challenge, disagree with. I've even asked him to come on his program to debate me. I've sent him a lot of information showing where I felt he was wrong, and here's information. Please take a look at it or have your producers see that you're on the wrong side of this issue. Even with the right intent, a lot of people get it wrong. But he's the only form out there that allow people like Naomi Wolf or others who were in the heart of liberal media to have a voice. They no longer allow any of these people to have a voice. Here's Naomi Wolf, Dr. Naomi Wolf, breaking down the upsetting statistics on pregnancy and women and the vaccine. Remember, none of the vaccine makers would allow pregnant women, cancer patients, heart disease patients, dementia patients, autoimmune patients to be in their test to see if it's safe or effective. But the moment it was done, all of them were told to get the vaccine. Oh, and to make sure that you understand that they were all told to get the vaccine, let's just go Rodney number 3, the recording of AstraZeneca's CEO, Pascal Soriot. Soriot.
You have to know a number of...
Go ahead, let's hear it.
...people cannot be vaccinated.
On a company-wide Zoom call on December 3rd, 2020, AstraZeneca CEO Pascal Soriot stated millions of people with immune deficiencies can't be vaccinated. Even back then, he saw enormous potential in monoclonal antibody treatments.
Like if you have an immune disease, lupus, or some other immune condition, you cannot or multiple sclerosis, you cannot be vaccinated. So there are millions of people in the world that will need a protection that cannot be coming from a vaccine. So the long-acting antibody has enormous potential. This long-acting antibody is quite unique because this is the only combination that potentially will last more than 6 months, up to potentially 12 months, and protect people for a long period of time.
Monoclonal antibody treatments were known to be effective relatively early in the COVID-19 pandemic, and some states in the U.S. moved quickly to use it as a frontline defense. However, the federal government actively pushed against the use of those treatments in favor of the vaccine.
The Biden administration, which outright revoked authorization for two very popular monoclonal antibody treatments that the state of Florida really pioneered over the summer. We have had people use it, and we've had good results. People have a right to access these treatments, and to revoke it on this basis is just fundamentally wrong.
If the CEO of one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies realized back in 2020 that antibody treatments are necessary for the immunocompromised, why would governments around the world force vaccine mandates when millions of people are at risk if they got it?
We are looking at a winter of severe illness and death unvaccinated for themselves, their families, and the hospitals they'll soon overwhelm. But there's good news. If you're vaccinated, you have your booster shot, you're protected from severe illness and death.
But getting that shot really was an amazing feeling. It hits you.
Okay. What did you just hear? You heard one of the world's top three pharmaceutical companies that makes vaccines, AstraZeneca, and their top CEO say, quote, millions of immunocompromised people cannot be vaccinated, meaning they should not be vaccinated. Why then is the CDC, the World Health Organization, Anthony Fauci, and all the other dancing clown scientists in this country and physicians, nurses, vaccinating people without asking, are you immunocompromised? Because if that were the case, 130 million Americans would be excluded legitimately and for medical legitimate reasons for not getting the vaccine. 100% of people were supposed to be vaccinated, according to Bill Gates. A person didn't graduate from college. Forget that he's very rich. Look at Paul Allen, the real brains behind why Microsoft existed and how he got rich. And then look at the 60 Minute piece of how ruthless he was in trying to get to have Paul Allen thrown out of his company with nothing. All right? And Paul Allen answering that. But no, the energy isn't focused on Bill Gates as if he's an expert. Let me see the science class he's taken, the epidemiology, immunology, virology, bacteriology class he's taken. None. But he's got a checkbook and he writes big checks. And by God, that's one way to buy allegiance in the United States. So, you heard it. Now you, with common sense and reason, you put it together in your mind. On the one hand, we have a government that is demanding you get vaccinated, or you could be a second-class citizen, or you're excluded from a lot. And on the other hand, legitimate medical reasons not to be vaccinated with that particular vaccine, but it's not against, this person's not saying it be against vaccines, but this is not a regular vaccine. In fact, technically, this really isn't a vaccine. It's a biological agent. Now, that's one thing you heard. See the contradiction between the media? Oh, yes, everybody should get vaccinated. And then the people. If you're not vaccinated, you're an enemy. You're a selfish person. No, I have this disease. Doesn't matter. You're a selfish person. Get away from me or I'll slug you in the mouth. That's the attitude of the average American today. Hostile, angry, violent, rageful, and without any sense of compromise to the realities of what another person is dealing with. Just pure brute reaction. That's our government. That's our White House. That's the corporate America. That's the media. Look at how they talk about an issue. Look at the New York Times pillaring Tucker Carlson for three straight days. I read each piece. I cannot tell you how insulting to the intellect that is. Do they not have any intellects left? Do they not have any people capable of doing honest reporting? If you don't like Tucker Carlson, just say, I am biased in the beginning of this article. I do not like him. All right? Then at least we know that you're giving us your own biased opinion. But no, they couch it as if we're the New York Times. Yeah. You're the New York Times. Who controls the New York Times? Did you not have to have a bailout from the number one billionaire in Mexico, the great controller of all their media, the media baron? Yes. And without his bailout, would you have gone bankrupt? Yes. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But let's go further. It also talked about having a very successful treatment proven by multiple scientific studies on monoclonal antibodies. Now, mind you, if you're telling the world, we've heard of an herb in the Amazon that may help people with COVID, that's one thing. That's pure hypothesis and speculation. Show us the proof. It's another thing when you have orthodox medicine and orthodox science proving something, and then orthodox medicine and orthodox corporate science, capitalist science, vulture capitalism saying, if we can't profit from it, we have to destroy any competition. Boom, in comes the White House, in comes the Justice Department, and out goes monoclonal antibodies, which if you got them early, were one of the best treatments you could get. That was also true for, we've now have all these articles, legitimate quality articles and scholars showing that the attacks against all other therapies, medical FDA-approved therapies, off-label use, were legitimate. So that means that the New York Times the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Lancet, all engaged in dishonest and reprehensibly vile propaganda of a political nature, and think of how many lives they cost. Now, you heard too. Now let's hear what Naomi Wolf has to say.
Looking at the actual VAERS adverse event reports, what you see is that this had horrific outcomes. This section covering pregnancy and lactation on pages 12 to 13 reveals that only that 20% of the 413 reported cases of adverse events for pregnant women were, quote, serious. These include 25 miscarriages, 5 fetal deaths, as well as uterine contractions during pregnancy, preterm deliveries, premature rupture of membranes, and fetal growth restriction, meaning the babies could not develop fully. Also included were serious and less serious adverse side effects of breastfed babies that included infantile vomiting, fever, rash, agitation, and allergy to the vaccine. 6 women having adverse events who got the vaccine while breastfeeding included partial paralysis, suppressed lactation, breast pain, migraines, and breast milk discoloration. And Pfizer's response to the above alarming data in the secret documents was there were no safety signals that emerged from the review of these cases of use in pregnancy and while breastfeeding. The last thing I'm going to say in this shocking, shocking report is that this doctor also looked right there at the Department of Defense data, which has been exposed by 3 whistleblowers represented by attorney Tom Rentz. And what they're showing, again, I keep raising the question of, is this a national security breach? Is this a national security breach? Because we don't know the level of micrograms that were given to female pregnant soldiers in our military, or to any of the soldiers in our military, or sailors, or Air Force members. And that we've shown makes a difference, because when you get up to 100 micrograms, people get very, very sick. So in this database, they observed disturbing evidence of dramatic increases in serious medical conditions among military personnel in 2021. And among these are congenital malformations of fetuses. The rise in congenital malformations increased dramatically from a baseline rate of 10,906 cases per year to, in 2021, when female soldiers were being, and sailors and pilots were being forced to take this experimental vaccine, it rose to 18,951 congenital malformations for even part of the year of 2021. For part of the year of 2021, it nearly doubled. The fetuses of our brave women, soldiers, sailors, Air Force members who were pregnant, who submitted to what our president said they had to do as the commander-in-chief, took this experimental vaccine, their babies suffered. Their babies suffered. And this is a criminal attack on our military, on the brave women and men in our military. The NIH concludes that it's safe and effective in spite of these numbers for pregnant women. And she makes a final point that all of the spokesmodels use the phrase, the data suggest it's safe and effective. And she points out that the word suggest is one of those weasel words that really represents the lowest level of certainty, quote unquote, expert opinion. She concludes the evidence is clear that the potential risks of pregnant women getting vaccinated with the new mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, the far outweigh the benefits. And, you know, this is honestly one of the worst things I've ever seen in my 35 years as a reporter. This is an attack on American women. It's an attack on pregnant women, intentionally or not intentionally. The fact that Pfizer saw these data, the American gynecologists and obstetrics organizations knew of this data, the FDA knew of this data, that, 44 French rats were autopsied and their fetuses are fine, so go ahead and get injected, pregnant woman who trusts me. This is a crime that every single mother, grandmother, husband, who cares about women of childbearing age should be horrified and appalled by. It is a major criminal act, and I really have to ask, knowing about this data and letting female soldiers take this vaccine.
Okay, that's Dr. Naomi Wolf. How is this all happening? How is it that we now have an agency that is being put into place by decree that will be able to say only one way of knowing what is true and accurate? We will tell you. That means what you just heard, you wouldn't be able to hear. What I'm saying, you wouldn't be able to hear. What documentaries we're doing, you wouldn't be able to watch. It would all be on the disinformation list. It would be the largest disinformation campaign, book burning, and censorship in world history. How do we get here? Part of it is because of what I call the musings of woke cancellation, destruction of human dignity and thriving. What exactly does that mean? During the past 2+ years, the rise of wokeness and its cancel culture, and this is what you're dealing with now, canceling the truth, canceling free speech, canceling honest scientific and journalistic integrity investigations that show you that what you're doing should be questioned or not done. It has shocked the sensibilities and moral fabric of the nation. It has fueled divisions between races and class and economic status, levels of education and political allegiances. However, the anger that wokeness has carried into civil discourse is a symptom of a much deeper causal factor buried in the national psyche. It is the America's pervasive reality deficit disorder, RDD. Now, this is a condition that has proliferated across American landscape since the Age of Enlightenment and the 19th century's advent of scientific materialism as a secular religion. And now the media is becoming a part. They consider themselves the savants, the literary savants of this new religion. The proponents of modern behavioralism and neurosciences are likewise public face. These are plastic liberal intellectuals who have found their sense of self-righteousness reinforced by spreading a postmodern gospel of blatant censorship to purge all of society of anyone at any level who criticizes them. Truth is completely irrelevant. Philosophy and postmodern sociology in general, notably the modern philosophies of science and mind, often suffer from this mental affliction. They write books about their philosophers' books, who in turn wrote books about their predecessors' scribbling. Right-wing critics of wokeness and certain factions within the postmodern critical race theory likewise indulge in a similar cognitive hallucination built upon feeble-minded pre-Galilean superstitions. Their perceptions about themselves and the world, their righteous anger and biases are similar to dreamscapes, phantoms they have conjured, which have dire long-term consequences to the welfare of innocent victims, prejudiced and canceled by their vitriol and condemnation. As one example, think in the 1960s and 70s when I was beginning my career, anyone who advocated a kind of holistic diet and high fiber was considered as a health nut, no exceptions. There have always been conflicting ideologies, cherished beliefs, and inflamed emotions toward racial discrepancies in social order and justice, or how the nation should be governed. But today, these cognitive afflictions, masquerading as passions and righteous causes, are disintegrated into tribalism. My goodness, when I turn on CNN, I see nothing but tribal activities. And they're all singing the same mantra to hypnotize themselves into believing what they're saying. This is now fomenting new class and racial distinctions and struggles, as well as media turf wars. No one can accurately predict where this collective reality deficit disorder will lead ultimately, but it certainly won't contribute to a positive advancement of human well-being. It repeats the old adage of garbage in, garbage out. How do you create peace in a conflict like Ukraine? War, weapons, money unaccounted for, and ideologues from all walks of life that benefit from war. Let them lead the message. What's the outcome? Look at Vietnam. Look at Afghanistan. That's the outcome. Why can't we stop it? Because too many people profit from it, and the rest don't understand it. Undoubtedly, the woke culture perceives itself as being wise. But wisdom doesn't arise from being afflicted with ADHD or being self-righteous or finding one's worth in how audaciously confrontational one can be towards an enemy, Do you really think that anyone is moved when they're being yelled and screamed at, demeaned and cursed, or beaten? No. Our wise women and men today are those who have seen many struggles and have incorporated their knowledge into making society more equitable, to bring jobs back, to erect means of protecting those who are disenfranchised by corporate and political greed and exploitation. Nevertheless, these are the reputations the woke want to destroy. These are the truths they do not want you to understand or hear. These are the professors who will quietly go along with what they know inherently are foolish, unscientific, and completely wrong-headed thoughts by young, idealistic, at least politically idealistic people who don't understand the consequences of their foolishness. As a result, individuals who have the insight to analyze and discern the faulty thinking and self-cherishing delusions behind canceling the lives of others, such as Noam Chomsky or Gloria Steinem or Chris Hedges, etc., they are the ones who are to be canceled. It is an immoral mindset to believe that one has the right to destroy another's accomplishments regardless of whether one agrees or not. Today, if you disagree with someone, destroy them. Take no prisoners. Cancel culture's race theory has been hoisted high on the flagpole of zealous doctrinal crusades. This banner is carried within the ranks of faux liberals and progressive wannabes and pseudo-intellectuals. And that is unfortunate. Look at D'Angelo in her book. And who said this about it? Jarrett Stepman of Daily Signal. Miserable self-help guides for upper-middle-class, white, deeply committed progressives who are desperately searching for a way not to be racist in a world where denying your racism is an example of racism, end quote. Yes, we observe the philosophy of Robin DiAngelo's white fragility influence spreading throughout academic institutions without challenge, indoctrinating younger, completely pliable minds until they become adults, and then they are too late to change. And they are infiltrated in the media, in the media in the larger sense, in newspapers, radio, and in Washington. We have no doubt that subjecting these young minds to such a bleak and meaningless view of life is contributing to our nation's epidemic of depression and existential angst. It is adversely damaging the most pliable, impressionable, and easily influenced minds and guiding them to believe in illusions without a credible scientific basis. The current younger generation is being brainwashed to believe in this pathological illusion now touted as an absolutist proclamation. Those seeking power will use it for their own ends, as we are already witnessing in undergraduate university curriculums. It has long been an American habit to succumb to brainwashing and then be persuaded to purchase junk that you do not need, in fact, is bad for you. But no one criticizes. This has also been our culture's most effective remedy to temporarily relieve mental anxiety and pessimism and hopelessness. Tune out and let those in power spoon-feed you their noxious elixirs daily. Democracy depends upon sustaining an open society, a free society, that can provide a safe accommodation for many diverse voices. Certainly the voices of wokeness should have a place in this arena. Let them be there. I'm not censoring them. I've invited D'Angelo and all the rest of them on to debate me. And as you know, for many of my debates, I treat people civilly. But equally, it should be stated that we should not simply receive detractors and their criticisms about cancellation without understanding its tragically dehumanizing perspective that is condemning millions of unjustified ridicule by other races. You're born a race, the color of your skin, you're now monikered for life. By whom? By people who once considered themselves reasonable, who looked for the truth, who understood human suffering, and understood how manipulation could control a crowd and create a false consensus. And now we have consensus medicine, consensus science, consensus media, consensus education, consensus financing. My goodness. Where is there room left for the independent thinker? There is not. Only a maladjusted person would believe it that they have a right over all others. But it has plenty of fans in the woke liberal class who have become radically left, radically liberal. Now the traditional liberal who has fought the good fights, who's helped us progress, who has been there to challenge the deep state and would never, never think about inviting former directors of the CIA and the National Security Agency in to give it advice, knowing how absolutely programmed these people are. But that doesn't mean that the radical left won't, and that's where a lot of this is coming. It was the great Trappist monk Thomas Merton who wrote in Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander that the greatest need of our time is to clean out the enormous mass of mental and emotional rubbish that clutters our minds and makes all political and social life a mass illness. Without this house cleaning, we cannot begin to see. Unless we see, we cannot think. Merton believed that this purification must begin with the mass media. So I'm asking you, walk away from the mass media. Walk away from those who will not tolerate your opinion or your insight. Teachers who embrace wake wokeism, social folly, and logical fallacies need to be introspectively gazing and observing the destructive ataxia nesting in their own minds. If anyone wonders why the nation is so angry and screaming and protesting, one reason is because the failed neoliberal experiment, the culture of political nepotism, a captured and biased media, and a thoroughly corrupt judiciary have created this horror show, all within the context of not a capitalism based upon fairness, but one based upon profiteering at someone else's loss. And the followers of wokeness seemingly want to gather tinder to keep racial conflagrations burning. And that is unfortunate, because who said it best? Martin Luther King: nothing on our world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. And that's what we're knee-deep in, just like an intellectual quicksand. It is our deep ignorance about not first knowing ourselves and appreciating our intrinsic interconnections with each other and the environment that perpetuates the suffering around us. These deeper existential relationships can potentially outsmart and surpass the benefits of critical race theory that is completely hollow of any spiritual and true intellectual, historical, accurate understanding of the human condition. Underlying any social structure is to be found cognitive causal relationships. This includes our attachments to whatever accomplishments and failures we experience in our lives through racial identity, which may lead to a reality deficit with all of its superiority complexes, apathy, and depression. In conclusion, if critical race theory is correct, then all whites, without exception, in American history were unconsciously transmuted into racists starting at the time of their birth. What is their proof? It is supercilious. Is there any scientific evidence to support this outrageous claim? No. Have we had racism? Yes. Have we overcome that racism? The major racism, yes. We will always have racists. We always have bigotry. We always have biases. We always have those who refuse to change, but they are not the majority. And it is not by their wokeness, nor by their understanding of their own limited life, that they will help contribute to the larger free society, one that we can prosper spiritually, emotionally, intellectually, we can forgive, and we can work together. But they are not a part of that. So if modern American society relies solely upon mental and emotional distractions to survive, clearly there is no hope for constructive solutions to emerge to confront climate change, racism, identity politics, inequality, or the war in Ukraine, or having a new department that wants to know that only its creation of truth is allowed to get out. And you know the consequences of that, because it's always the other side of the sword that you never are shown. That's the one dripping with blood. On the one hand, they say, look at us. This sword is to protect you from misinformation that could be harmful to you. And the other side is, for those who are giving misinformation, which is over half the American population and its institutions and virtually all of its critical thinkers and to all of its honest journalists and to all of the good teachers, you're now to be punished. And we have no consequences. Just like Barack Obama had no conscience nor consequence to setting off all those flights, those armed flights that killed thousands of innocent civilians, and yet not once is he confronted with unnecessary deaths he caused, nor signing in to law the National Defense Authorization Act, which means that you can be arrested, hell without trial, hell without evidence, hell without bail, hell without defense for the rest of your life. That actually exists. So look carefully, because they're only showing you what they want you to believe is in your best interest. Best interest for you, and against whose interest? Truth no longer will exist. Your rights no longer exist. Your freedoms no longer exist. Your privacy no longer exists. That's how serious it is. I'm Gary Nall, and my commentary, musings on woke cancellations, and will be posted later today. And now, if you'd like to call in and share your point of view, please do so, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And the moment we get a call up, I'll be happy to take it. So if you do not protest, this is coming. The only thing that can prevent this from coming is enough people call their legislators Democrat and Republican. And by the way, for those of you who are the hardcore corporatist Democrats and the faux liberal, understand that your alienation in such a short period of time and your radicalization of what all Americans are supposed to acquiesce to and get in line with, you're asking people who have long, rich cultures, long, rich heritage in their ethnicities, long, rich beliefs in the sanctity of their lives and what goes into their body and goes into their mind. You're asking all these people to abandon everything in their entire culture's history to get in line with your new wokeness. How do you think that's going to happen at voting time? I'm willing to project that an awful lot of people who historically were drawn in by the charisma of a Barack Obama or a Bill Clinton will be repelled and realize how they've been lied to and manipulated by these new royalists, these new elitists who do not have any idea what it is to be you. They do not know your suffering, your trials and tribulations. They just know that they want you to vote for them so they can maintain the power. And then look at what they've created and then think, wow, you mean that's what I voted for? And the answer is yes, you voted for it. I don't see any calls up, Rodney. If we have no calls, let me know and we'll end the program. If we do, I'll take a call. Okay, we're out of time anyhow. Thank you all for listening. If you found anything in this program of value, pass it forward. We don't do any advertising, no promotion. It's just word of mouth. Have a nice day, everyone.